CliffCentral.com.
Alrighty. Good morning, everybody. Yes, we are live. This is CliffCentral.com on a Wednesday morning. I'm Garrett Cliff. We're joined this morning by Damon Calvari. Hey, Damon, how's it going?
Yes, good morning, good morning. Boy, I look terrible. I look like I'm almost 50 years old.
But aren't you almost 50 years old?
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, this happens, right?
Oh, my God. I was actually looking at the mirror the last few days, and I got this, and if you look closely, you probably, I'm developing folds
yeah,
around the edges of my eyes.
Oh my god.
Getting old.
That's how you know.
I'm trying to sort my lighting. Oh no. That's the best it's going to get.
Yeah, that's called monster lighting. It's coming from the bottom.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the scariest.
No, I look like I'm from Cats. Half my face is in the shade. Anyway,
what is
going on this morning? Sure, what did I miss? What happened in America the last 6 hours?
America? I'm not even sure. I haven't been paying attention to America either. But
Israel. Oi, Israel.
Israel.
Oi,
listen,
Israel.
Where is your microphone? Is it rubbing against that jersey, or where exactly is it?
The microphone is on the computer.
Okay, no, because it appears
that
it's... I'm getting, like, noise out of your microphone.
Oh, you know what? Is some... that's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll try not to move around, eh?
Well, it's just rubbing on your jersey, and then it's annoying, so...
This is a Naomi Calvari. This is not just any jersey.
Is that a Naomi Calvari? But that's not a very colorful one.
Naomi Calvari, yeah.
It's not a very colorful one.
It's one of the latter vintages.
Yeah.
Where she got less colorful in her latter years, or her customer, that's me, required darker colors.
Oh right. Okay. All right. Now listen.
Or monochrome.
We've just gone live on YouTube. Sorry about this. We've had a bit of a mess. Sia's got some internet problems at home this morning, and Damon, his microphone is rubbing on his Naomi Calvari original. So this is a very unprofessional start to the show, but we'll try to clean it up.
I haven't even brushed my teeth.
No.
Hello, Alexa. Good morning, my darling.
All right. There we go.
She's got a school bag ready. Cool. Do you want to come say hello quickly?
Yeah. All right.
No, she doesn't want to.
So apart from the unprofessional start, what is going on in Jerusalem? As I understand it, there's trouble because Fatah and Hamas are meant to be going to the polls. Like the Palestinian Authority is meant to be electing their next leadership for the next election. And when these... Yeah, Fatah and Hamas. And when they're meant to go to the polls, invariably they're going to be judged on their merits, which neither party really has in the Palestinian Authority. Neither is running anything extremely well. I mean, Hamas is not in power. Fatah is, with old Mohammed Abbas. But as I understand it, all of those things that we saw on the Temple Mount were pre-planned. It's not some random thing that's just happened. And... you know, what is interesting is to watch those Israeli, that sky dome of theirs, where if you fire rockets into Israel, they have these systems that immediately obliterate the rockets. And it looks like a fireworks display. I'm not making light of it because there are people in shelters at the moment with all of these rockets coming over. But it's an incredible thing to watch, hey?
Gareth, I'm so confused, man. I never know what's... How did this all start? They wanted to evict Palestinians from somewhere in East Jerusalem, right?
No, so there's all right.
I'm so confused because these Palestinians have been living there all this time. It's now 2021. Why do the Israelis want to do it now?
Okay, let me explain from the little bit that I know, but this I know to be true. All right, first thing, that land was originally owned by Jews in 1948. Okay. When Jordan attacked, they took over that part of Jerusalem. They chased the Jews out, as is usual for that part of the world. You know, when Israel takes over a place, it doesn't chase out the Palestinians. I mean, I think it's 2/5 of the population of Israel is Palestinian or Muslim, right? That's not the case in parts of Palestine that are occupied by Palestinians. There are, it's Judenrein, as the Germans used to say. It's clear of Jews. So that happened, and the Jewish families that owned those houses and those places in that east part of Jerusalem you're talking about, they still have the title deeds to those. And it was settled in one of the peace negotiations that that land must be returned to those Jewish families that occupied it before 1948. Anyway, that was not done, and the Palestinian families that have been living there for 70 years without paying rent have now been told you've got to get out. You know, like if you don't pay rent, if you're in an apartment and you don't pay your rent, you get told by the landlord you've got to get out. They don't own that property.
Was there some high court decision to say all of this?
Yes. This is by the book. So what's happened is that this has given a pretext to, and that's why I brought up Fatah and Hamas, because it's given a pretext to them to make it look like the Jews are the bad guys here again. The Israelis are the bad people, you know, because they don't want to go to the polls. Because if they go to the polls now, there's going to be all kinds of shit. You see, there's competition between, it sounds really stupid, but this is a distillation of the problem. There's competition between Hamas, who are far more of a terrorist organization. I mean, it's not controversial for me to say that, because they are on a list of terror organizations based on the perspective of almost every country in the world, with the exception of places like South Africa. And Hamas is widely regarded as being, you know, a terrorist organization. There's no other way to put it. Fatah, who've been running the West Bank and Gaza for the longest time now, are not a terrorist organization. But what happens when they get into competition with Hamas is they're forced to ramp up their anti-Israeli rhetoric and all of that stuff. And ultimately what this is a distraction. This is to distract people again from the fact that these two stupid parties in Palestine, neither of them can run the place. And then, okay, of course it's bad old Israel's fault. You know, Israel's an oppressor, and Israel's the apartheid regime of the Middle East and all of this stuff. It's just nonsense.
Where's the connection then? I don't understand the Israeli army arriving, attacking or going into the Al-Aqsa Mosque with stun grenades and rubber bullets. I don't understand. Where's the connection? Why are they wild? Why did that happen?
Well, this is where they were going to stage their kind of, not the Israelis, but the Palestinians are going to stage their uprising, their rebellion against this injustice on the east of Jerusalem. But it's all pre-planned, and it's they press a button and then the violence starts, and it's all a distraction, as I've said to you, to try and distract away. Listen, Mahmoud Abbas has been in charge of Fatah, or has been the headman of Fatah for such a long time now, that I think the guy before him was Yasser Arafat. That's how long he's been there. In any other country, they'd be saying,
is that 1993, I think?
Yeah, they'd be saying, hey, hang on, isn't it a time for a change in leadership? But of course, you know, this is not how things work in the Palestinian Authority. So if you really think Israel's the bad guy here, you're believing a whole lot of lies, if you ask me. And you know, I'm straight up, I'm not going to deny that I'm partisan in this. I've been a Zionist and a supporter of the State of Israel for the longest time. I'm not going to make any apologies for it. If you think that you have a better narrative to tell, then you can read all the mainstream media publications in the world that take the side of the Palestinians. As I understand it, that is as much as I know. I can't tell you any more than
that. Well, the narrative that I'm getting from, like, say, the Media Review Network, which is that Palestinian lobby group in South Africa,
right?
Their version is that the Israeli army are just attacking innocent worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Yeah. That's a story I read.
Right.
There was nothing in the Al-Aqsa Mosque about any uprising. I just read the story that the army just started attacking people. That's the version I read.
Yeah, it's always the version.
Who do you believe?
Bad old Israel.
Who do you believe?
I told you who I believe. I don't believe that crap version you just gave me.
Well, it's not my version. I know.
That is not the version I believe. So.
Yeah, and then the other version, again, to the flip side of the coin, is that the story that I'm reading is that Palestinians have been evicted from their houses in East Jerusalem, and the version that you gave, that originally there were Jews before 1948, and yada yada. Not a word about that.
Yeah, of course not, because it's hugely.
Gareth, I've got to be honest. I don't know who to believe.
Well, then
I don't know who to believe. It is the weirdest, strangest part of the world, and from a media news point of view, it is like, it is such a conundrum of it's like an enigma.
All I can say to you is, if you don't know more than you and I have spoken of here, and then rather don't get involved, because unfortunately, happens?
100% correct, Gareth.
What happens?
The thing is, what I found interesting is that I've read. I promise you, I've tried to inform myself. I've read about from the Palestinians' point of view. I've read it from the Jewish people's point of view. And you know what? There's just so much information. How do you actually work it all out? You'll speak to somebody, a Jewish person in Johannesburg. Well, if you look at the 1967 borders, and this happened at Oslo, and this, but Stephen, you're a plumber. What do you know? Everyone's got an opinion. I don't know what you think.
This is the same as the last time you and I got involved in that discussion, which turned into an argument about COVID, is that there are different narratives that float around here, and there are people who genuinely make it their business to confuse people like you and me. They make it their business to sell us a kind of narrative rather than the truth. Journalism's gone out of the window, and this is why I don't take any of the mainstream news sources as seriously as I used to. You know, Damon, you remember, we used to look through the newspapers every single day before the show. We'd look at what was going on in the world, and we took it at face value. We said, okay, you know, why would a journalist make up a story about if someone was shot, for example, in a township, and there was a service delivery protest? Why would someone make up a counter narrative? Well, we know now that that's been going on. It hasn't been going on to the degree that it is now. But these days, every piece of news is actually a piece of propaganda, depending on which side you're on. And it goes for just about everything. What makes it very hard for all of us, especially those of us who don't have a whole lot of time to be doing what you just said now, reading through every source and trying to get every opinion, trying to see it from every point of view, because it's exhausting. And if you're not in that country, if you're not in Israel or Palestine, and you're trying to make sense of this, who the hell do you believe? So what inevitably happens is people like me go, all right, well, I don't trust the Palestinian Authority. They've got, you know, there are 100 reasons why. Historically, I don't believe any of them, going back all the way to Yasser Arafat, and ever since with Mahmoud Abbas and the Fatah and Hamas parties, and just how deliberately they have put their own people in the line of fire for political ends. And I go, well, I can't trust you people. I can't trust your news sources, and I can't trust those sources in America or in Europe that are anti-Israeli. For whatever reason, they claim that they're objective. I just don't believe them. And in this case, I prefer to go with the sources that I can trust and that I believe. And I've got friends in Israel, and I've got people who send me articles, and I try to read a broad range of these things. But if I can see it's propaganda from the first couple of lines, I just move on. You can usually tell in a story. If someone has a dog in the fight. And I have to say, you know, there are a lot of people in Israel who try their best to be objective. There are a lot of Israelis and Palestinians who try to tell the truth without starting a story as propaganda. So I'm not a complete idiot, and neither are you. You can usually read in the first line how they're trying to frame the story. And if they're trying to frame it simplistically, like, these are the good guys, these are the bad guys, usually you can't trust those people. So if it was an Israeli publication and they said, the Palestinians are evil people who fire rockets at us with no for no good reason, and this is why, then you know you're dealing with propaganda. Similarly, if you deal with, well, the Israelis are evil people, they just attacked us unprovoked on Al-Aqsa Mosque Hill, you know, the Temple Hill, then you go, well, I can't trust you either. So what I do now is I look for the story rather than for an opinion on the story, because these journalists are all morons. And they're basically told by their publications to take an angle on things. You know, it's the same way as people who watch MSNBC in America. They don't want to see the right view. The people who watch Fox, they don't want to see the left view. So what they are sold every day is stuff they already believe because of confirmation bias. They sold stories that fit their own worldview. So it works for them. They love it. Because most people don't want to be challenged. They don't actually want to know the truth. They just want to see the world the way they already see it and have evidence of that later on. It's great. So that's the world we live in, I'm afraid. And you know, that's part of the reason that I like to have this show, because we can talk these things over and sometimes get into arguments, which I love. You know, I don't have a problem with an argument, especially with you, because I know you don't take it personally. And Israel and Palestine, is just, it's not going to go away. Just when we thought, because I think we'd reached a point somewhere in the last 5 to 10 years where things were starting to settle down there. You know, you had Saudi Arabia saying, okay, fine, we'll let, you know, LL planes fly over us, for example. You had Qatar and the UAE establishing embassies with Israel. Those were good signs. They were signs that things were starting to settle down, because in the Middle East, most of the narrative is Israel-Palestine. And that's not the big story. The real big story in that part of the world is Iran versus Saudi Arabia. But if you're Palestine, that doesn't help you. So what they do is they constantly are trying to grab some of the attention, grab the headlines, grab the stories, change the narratives, make it about them so that they can have what they want. And listen, I understand what they want. They want a state of Palestine. The only problem is that in addition to that, they don't really care if the state of Israel exists or not. So they'd be perfectly happy. And they've made this clear in every negotiation since Camp David and Bill Clinton back in the 90s, that if Israel exists or not, they couldn't really be bothered. But they'd actually prefer if they didn't. As far as they're concerned, the whole of Israel is Palestine. And to me, that's just not a place you can negotiate from, you know. And there are hardliners in Israel. Don't get me wrong on that front either. There are hardliners in Israel who are filling parts of the country, particularly around Jerusalem, with Israeli settlers from other countries, with Jews from the rest of the world, in order to keep expanding their borders, like Lebensraum, if you'll pardon that rather ugly comparison. And this leads to inevitable conflict. But for the last while, it's been going okay. You know, I thought, good, finally the Middle East is settling down a little bit. But that obviously has been dashed against the rocks. And I'm afraid this Biden administration is going to do nothing to help Israel. Nothing. They are profoundly, the Democratic Party in America is profoundly anti-Semitic. They have in their...
Woo!
Oh, they are.
Anti-Semitic?
Anti-Semitic. They have in their Democratic Congress, in fact, in their International Relations Committee, they have people like Ilhan Omar, Rashid Tlaib. These are people who have said obviously anti-Semitic things, and they've never been reprimanded by their own party. Now, if you said that on my show, and I mean, let's just put aside the fact that you are a Jew for a second, but if you said something anti-Semitic, and Jews can be anti-Semitic, I would say to you, you know what, that's not acceptable. And I'd say to you, you've got to apologize for that. It's like if you said something racist on my show, I'd say, you know what, that's not funny. You better apologize for that. But not, and we're an entertainment show, but if we were a political party, and you did that, I would say to you, you have to apologize. This is very bad for us. No one has ever, you've never heard Nancy Pelosi call in either of those two women I've just spoken about now, who've said really, really anti-Semitic things. No one's ever called them to order, and
I don't know. I follow the news reasonably closely, and this interpretation of what is anti-Semitic, if you criticize Israel...
That's not what they did.
Give me like an example if you can remember.
So the one thing, I mean, this sounds trivial, but the one thing that Ilhan Omar is reported to have said is when she spoke about it's all about the Benjamins. It's like all about the money. It's about how the Jews control the economy. You know, these evil Jews who control all the money in America and how they influence politics in America from a dangerous, dirty place. And, you know, basically the Jews are trying to exterminate Palestinians. This is a paraphrasing of what she said. And it's just not acceptable. No one's ever called her to order for that.
Okay, well,
you don't think that's anti-Semitic? That's pretty anti-Semitic, if you ask me.
Yeah, no, I just never, I can accept that. I must have missed it.
Well, because, because the media machine largely favors the Democratic Party in America, and they don't report on this stuff. I mean, it's unacceptable what's going on over there. It's really bizarre. And you can't have people like that in your party saying those kinds of things and never reprimand them. It's fine if they've said it and they go, okay, look, I'm really sorry. I won't say that again. They might still harbor those thoughts deep down inside. It's like a racist. You never know if they don't have racist thoughts deep down inside. But they should bloody well apologize for it if they have, you know.
Can I get a bit fantastical or try get slightly philosophical? I don't know if that's the correct term. If we go back in time.
Yeah.
So.
Let's go back.
Israel was created as a sanctuary for Jews, and if the Holocaust didn't happen, Israel probably wouldn't have been established, right?
I don't know. I mean, you know, Israel's claims to that part of the world go back a couple of thousand years, Damon. It doesn't start in 1948 out of the blue. I don't think that's...
Because in hindsight...
That's a fair thing. Don't you think that's a fair thing to say? I mean, you know, we've got accounts from like 5,000 years ago. I think that's a fairly long stretch of history for the Jews to have.
I got you. I'm just thinking in hindsight, maybe Israel should have been somewhere else, maybe just outside Las Vegas. Like, I mean, has it been worth it?
Well, you have to ask people who live there.
Well, what do you think?
Let me tell you something. I think people are going to fight over parts of this globe and have been for thousands of years. In fact, the story of human history is pretty much a story of people trying to get land from each other. And in this country, we've got our own issues around land. So this is not an unusual discussion, right? But that part of the world is particularly fractious because you've got holy land, you've got sacred territory, you've got places like the Temple Mount, you've got places like, you know, the original remains of what the Christians consider to be the Holy Sepulchre in one quarter. You've got the city of David, where the Jews believe that David established the first Jerusalem. That's some 3,400 years ago, somewhere around there. I mean, we're talking about a part of the world where books have been written about the historical significance of that part of the world. You know, the cave where Abraham and Sarah are meant to be buried, which is a holy place to Muslims, to Jews, and to Christians. You've got places like the Sea of Galilee, which the Christians regard as one of the sites where Jesus performed his miracles. You've got the sites of the crucifixion, the birth of Jesus in Bethlehem. You've got the root of the Jews through, you know, the Sinai Peninsula to sacred sites there where Moses is supposed to have been given the Ten Commandments by God. You know, these are places which are not just about land anymore. Now it becomes about culture and history and things that really matter to people. I don't know how we're going to sort this out. I don't have any solutions. But I don't believe for a second that the Jews don't have a claim and certainly that they don't have a right to exist in that part of the world. And I don't believe for a second that the Muslims don't have a claim or a right to exist in that part of the world. Problem is, because it gets so heated and it's stoked by people on both sides who, and I don't mean to make a Donald Trump-like illusion, both sides, you know, but there are bad people and there are good
people on both sides.
There are bad people and good people on both sides. That's probably the truest statement Trump ever made. And it's also the one that got him into the most trouble. But the fact is here...
Nobody wasn't referring to the Middle East.
No, well, if Damon, if you were Palestinian and he said that about the Israelis, you'd feel the same way as, you know, people...
No, I'm not. I'm just saying Trump wasn't referring to the Middle East at the time. But he did anyway. Carry on.
Objectively, it's still a true statement. It's absolutely true.
Not in the Trump case, but anyway. Okay, carry on. We mustn't get into a fight.
All right.
It's not 10 to 8 yet.
I've got to get to headlines anyway, but I think we've talked this thing through. I can't say much more about it. I mean, you know what I'm going to say because it's stuff
objectively, Gareth. Objectively, has this been boring? Because that's what I worry about. We've been talking about this since 1948. Has this been boring? I don't know.
I think there's a huge amount of fatigue setting in around the Middle East. But for a little while there, we had some rays of hope. For a little while there, people were starting to imagine a kind of world where maybe Israel and Palestine would finally get along. Sorry.
Why can't we get along? Who said that?
Jack Nicholson in Mars Attacks.
Okay.
Why can't we all just get along?
Has he got dementia? He's retired, Gareth. Yes, he's got dementia, right?
I'll tell you about him in a second because I actually read a really interesting article about Jack Nicholson last week. But let's get to the headlines. So first of all, first headline, Jesse Duarte says, the ANC is not broken. We're just experiencing some cash flow problems. That's all she says. Can you believe that?
That's silly because there's more to it than that. There's all this infighting. Somebody at the NEC meeting actually objected to the presence of President Cyril Ramaphosa.
So listen to this. This has to do with their finances, okay? So Jesse Duarte said they've got some cash flow problems. She said the Party Funding Act that came into effect at the end of April, some of their funders had become reluctant to continue donating to the ANC. You don't say. Because remember, there was this act was passed. And remember, this Party Funding Act was passed by the majority of the ANC. This is how little foresight they have. So obviously what happens is, if you're a big ANC donor, now we can find out who you are. And a lot of people who've been donating to the ANC have suddenly looked at themselves in the mirror and gone, I don't want people to know I'm funding that criminal organization, because that's what they are. If you look at what's going on at the Zondo Commission, it seems clear to everybody that the ANC is just a way to steal public money. And a lot of their donors are probably saying, I don't want to be involved with this anymore. So they've run out of money. And the governing party's made headlines over cash flow. Resulted in staffers receiving salaries late on many occasions. So in audio leaks from the week, I want to know who it was who was recording that audio. Did you hear the audio of Thabo Mbeki?
I've just only read about it.
Yeah, I haven't heard it either. I've also read about it. But apparently they're going to have to halve the party's staff to manage the issue because, you know, the money's running out. This is a hard reality for the ANC. Duarte said the ANC's financial troubles were a well-known reality, and she admitted the situation had gotten worse since the Political Party Funding Act came into effect. Duarte said that while the party's donors were known to support other political parties, in the ANC's case, she said they had become weary. Good. If you're going to give money to a political party, we should know who you are, don't you think?
Oh, most definitely. But I just realized I've got something in common with the ANC. We both broke.
Yeah, you both have funding issues.
I've also got cash flow problems. Who would have thought? It's funny how 6 degrees of separation. It's amazing. Oh, you're blowing your nose. Sure.
Yeah, sorry. It's a morning ritual now for me. I don't know what the hell. Anyway, tissues for nasal issues. So let me just get to this quickly because I think there are other headlines that we need to pay attention to this morning. First of all, hundreds have rallied in Sudan for justice over the 2019 protests and the killings that were perpetrated there. So if you care about African news, and we try to cross to JJ Cornish once every 2 weeks to find out what's going on the continent, apparently a protest was held outside army headquarters in Khartoum, which is the capital of Sudan. Damon, your microphone is rubbing on your jersey.
Sorry.
It's the site where thousands gathered in 2019, initially demanding Bashir should step down and urged a transfer to civilian rule. But they are protesting again. And this time they're demanding that that they can have some justice over the killing of a number of people during the protests last year, the protests which were there to oust Omar al-Bashir. So we will have to see what happens there. But at the moment, there are hundreds of people, if not thousands of people, gathered in Khartoum protesting. So those are stories from EWN this morning. ENCA reports that in COVID-19, we have 1,548 new cases. Don't know what that means, but we only had 71 more deaths. So the death rate is dropping precipitously. And it's really time for us to just accept that this thing's pretty much over. There's none of that third wave stuff that they predicted. Remember, they said somewhere around the 5th or 6th of May, we would have a third wave. All the doomsayers and the people who keep trying to keep us in lockdown forever.
No, they're still saying it. They're still saying it can happen. They're still waiting for the wave.
From what? What would cause a wave now?
Since they expected it over Easter or just after Easter.
Well, TikTok, because Easter was now a long time ago, and I don't see any third wave, do you?
Well, let's see. Who knows? I saw last week they said that infection rates had gone up by 20% around the country, but for some reason in the Eastern Cape it was at 0%. I don't know how the Eastern Cape pulled that off. So we'll see. The thing is, Gareth, diseases do not read textbooks. So who knows?
And diseases...
There's no textbook.
But diseases can be...
Who knows?
Well, okay.
They don't know enough about this thing. You never know. The third wave is going to come. It will come. It's just a case of when.
So the Zulu...
Or maybe it won't come. The thing is, whether it comes or whether it doesn't, it's still a disease.
Yeah. I mean, you know, so there's this tiny, tiny, tiny chance you could die of COVID. I mean, let's not get in our cars because there's a 1.2% chance you'll be killed in an accident today.
I get in my car all the time.
Exactly.
I drive around all the time.
Exactly.
I drive around all the time. No one's not getting in their cars.
No, that's my whole point.
I get into my wife's car. I have to sell my car. But that's another story.
All right. We're talking about the Zulu royal family, and you know that there's been all kinds of chaos because when the king died, we weren't sure who the heir was. And then the Queen Regent died, and they buried her last week, and everybody was talking about that. So apparently, according to the news, there is no dispute over the AmaZulu throne. This is from ENCA. Prince Simakade Zulu, who is the other son of the late King Goodwill Zwelithini, has rubbished claims that he's opposing the appointment of the new king, who was announced to us over the weekend, Misu Zulu. So in a letter written to the AmaZulu traditional prime minister, Mangosuthu Buthelezi, this Prince Simakade says he supports the endorsement of Prince Misuzulu as the monarch. So apparently no disputes over the throne. Buthelezi is pleading with the public to stop spreading false and misleading information about the royal family. Well, why don't you guys make it clear how inheritance works in the Zulu royal family? That might help. Mangosuthu, how about that? How about you have a process? You've been around 250-odd years as a monarchy. How come you don't have a process yet for how to determine who the next king is? Why does it have to be these secret meetings and, you know, this one and that one and that one have to get together and decide to get... Surely it's just like either the eldest son takes it over, which is how a lot of monarchies work, or it's an election, which needn't be held in secret. If you want to make it difficult for us to understand, then don't complain when we misrepresent or mislead because we don't know the truth.
Maybe I'm not concentrating. Did they select the oldest son or the second or the youngest son?
This is the point, is you don't know, and you're not to be blamed for that because this is actually the son of the Queen Regent who died and the king. So what
is he a younger son or the oldest son or the middle son?
It doesn't matter because the king had many wives and it's about who the wife is. That is the mother of the son.
Is it about the first wife?
It's about, in this case, it's about the greatest of the wives, the most important of the wives.
Okay.
And
how do you decide who the most important wife?
Well, in this case, it was because she was also a Swazi royal, and
she
has more royal blood than any of the others. So in this case, that was the reason. But they don't explain this stuff to us, and then they wonder why we're confused.
But in all fairness, when was the last time they were in this situation?
Well, back in the 1940s, I think. So
Well, there you go.
But you know, the last time, like, the last time Britain, you know, crowned a monarch, it was 1952, and they're still.
Yes, but they had many. But didn't they have many more centuries before of experience?
So, a monarchy is a monarchy. The Prince of Liechtenstein is only about the fourth or fifth one. I mean, they know what they're doing. Monaco isn't that old. Oh. You know, get your shit together. Come on. Really, it's embarrassing. Anyway, so...
Well, not that embarrassing.
Apparently, here's a story which hasn't got a huge amount of traction because people, you know, we don't like our heroes to fall in this case. But Olympic champion Costa Semenya is expected to complete 50 hours of community service after she was arrested for alleged reckless driving in Centurion. Semenya appeared in the Pretoria Magistrates Court last week for allegedly driving recklessly in her SUV on the N14 highway.
Whoa.
NPA spokesperson Lumka Mahanjana said that she was granted 500 rand bail. She said,
This doesn't bode well for her a whole court case with the RAAF because she's driving like a man.
Careful now. The case was postponed to 26 August for a report from the National Institute for Crime Prevention and the Reintegration of Offenders. Can you believe it that this is being taken all the way to that? Anyway, they work to facilitate alternatives to prison for some child and first-time offenders, including diversion programs. She must have been driving pretty badly.
Gareth, let's be honest. How often does a woman get accused driving recklessly?
No, Damon. Damon, be very careful because you're going to go down a road that you don't want to.
I'm being devil's advocate.
Because the hardest kind of driving in the world is Formula One driving, and there's so many women in that.
Really?
No, I'm being sarcastic.
No, they aren't. You're being sarcastic, but they're not driving recklessly.
But Damon,
they're driving very skillfully.
That is the most difficult kind of driving in the world, right? Right?
I think rally driving is more difficult.
Okay, fine, rally driving. So many women in rally driving.
No, they aren't.
Exactly.
No, they aren't.
So, there may be more accidents.
I was looking at it from a civilian point of view.
Okay, from a civilian point of view, there may be more accidents involving men. Do you know why?
Because men drive badly.
Because there are more men driving. Most rural women in this country have never been at the wheel of a car. Rural women in South Africa, because they can't afford a car.
We like Saudi Arabia.
In some ways, you could argue that. But the fact is, this crap that, you know, women drive better objectively, it's because proportionally, there are just less women on the road. And yes, they probably do drive better, but that's entirely unsubstituted. You can't say something like that.
I totally accept your proportionality explanation, but there's always other theories as well.
Yeah.
You can't deny that women are more calmer. They don't get all macho behind the wheel. They're more mature in general. You can't deny that. I know there's no scientific data to back up what I just said.
Well, then don't
purely
say
anecdotal.
Then if it's anecdotal.
Purely anecdotal. But
preface it by saying, according to just me, Damon Kelvari, with absolutely no scientific evidence to back me up.
Well, I'm talking here.
Let's be fair then, because it's just your opinion. And it's as worthwhile as my dog's opinion, frankly. Anyway, so I just think
your
it's.
Dog.
My dog is pretty smart, I'll tell you that much. So, can I just go back to Costa Semenya for a second? She must have been driving pretty damn badly for this to be such a serious thing, because she could end up with a criminal record over this. You know that.
I think she does have one now.
And if she does, that will affect her ability to travel. It'll affect her ability to compete in international athletics. So this is a big problem.
Interesting. Do you smell a bit of a conspiracy? No conspiracy.
I don't think there's a conspiracy, but it just shows you, like, you know, even if you're famous and you're a hero to many South Africans, you could still get into trouble for driving badly. It shows you, right? So,
well, you know, when they use the word reckless, saying we don't know what that means. Was she speeding, or did she do a U-turn in the middle of a highway? They didn't give the details.
No idea. No idea. But still, this is an interesting story. You know, we've got the rain queen in South Africa, the Modjadji rain queens, right? And they are famous for being one of the country's very few female-run royal families. So in a shocking deviation from over 400 years of being ruled by a queen, the Balubedu Royal Council has announced that Prince Lukukela Mujaji will be the next king. And this is despite expectations that the 16-year-old Masalanabo would ascend to the throne when she turns 18. So they've got a king, for the a reign king instead of a reign queen. What does this mean?
Never heard of these people.
What does this mean for climate change?
Really? Yeah. Where is this royal family? Where are they situated?
They're in Limpopo. They're in Limpopo.
Okay, like Polokwane, Giyani, Zanin, what?
I don't know. Any idea? Somewhere in Limpopo.
Never heard of them. Never heard of them. Okay.
And just finally, because it just continues to be hilarious. Lucky Montana was at the Zondo Commission, and he said he has a bad relationship with the Zondo Commission. He said that the State Capture Commission of Inquiry are trying to curtail his evidence. He appeared on the 11th, which was yesterday, and it seems that he feels that he's being gunned for, Lucky Montana. So I don't really know what to say to him except,
Can you contextualize it? Just place him, Lucky Montana? What's he?
He was the CEO of PRASA for a while. Remember PRASA, the people
how embarrassing, PRASA. Yeah,
those ones who ordered the trains that don't fit the tracks.
Oh, my
those guys.
Lord, they're the wrong size. The trains don't fit on the tracks, or they're too high, or
disaster.
They're too wide.
Disaster.
How many billions did they blow? Was it
I don't remember the number.
20 billion or something?
I don't remember the number. It's terrible. Oh. Anyway, look, we could all have
the vaccine by now. You realize that?
Yeah.
Oh,
so a couple of comments on the stories in the news this morning. So Sindile saying that the son of both royal parents is good blood. That's why Misuzulu is the next king. I suppose that's one way of looking at it. Mpihleng says, "Your Damon, never knew you could be this spicy." They're enjoying you this morning.
What does it even mean?
Well, you've been controversial today.
I've been holding back. What do you mean? I don't want to get kicked off the show again.
Eleutheria says, as a woman, in my opinion, some women drive worse than men because they second-guess their decisions. That's
Eleutheria.
Eleutheria is a woman. She says, there's a lot of decisions you have to make on the fly when driving. You see, there isn't evidence to show that either gender is better or worse at this. That's why you can't make outlandish statements without backing it up. Because people get upset. I don't get upset. I could care less.
Hang on, Gareth.
I admit
you got that insurance company. You got that insurance company called First for Women, right?
Yeah, right.
Don't they give better premiums to women? Because their actuaries have proved that women have less are like safer.
I think that's a marketing decision. I think they are doing that because it's a marketing decision. And maybe it's true that women women do have less accidents. It doesn't necessarily mean they're better drivers.
Okay.
I don't know.
Thank you.
We don't get a breakdown of like traffic accidents over the Easter holidays and how many of the drivers were women or men or how many of them were black, white, colored, or Indian or how old or young they were. I mean, I'm willing to accept that women might be better drivers in terms of not having as many accidents, but that's not the only criterion.
For me, it's the main criteria I would look at.
Adam says Caitlyn Jenner is also a cuck driver for a guy.
No, well, Caitlyn's I'm a woman.
Yes, she's very. You hear she's running for governor of California, Damon.
Yeah, but her latest interview, because I haven't heard her for a while, her speaking voice has actually improved.
She's putting in a bit of an effort. Feminine. Yeah, she's actually making an effort.
But she was making no effort whatsoever before.
Yeah, she was just talking exactly now, like Bruce.
She sounds more like Billie Jean King now.
Right.
If you were on the phone with Caitlyn Jenner, and you didn't know male or female, it's become slightly neutral, actually. She's done well, but it's taken her long enough.
We've got a couple of things coming up in the next hour. We've got Simpiwe joining us as well. I don't know where Sia is this morning. It seems like he's having massive internet problems, but we'll figure that out as we go. I got.
Is he away? Is he gone to Durban? Maybe. No. The signal's worse.
He's around. I mean, he messaged me this morning, so I don't know what's actually happening technically, but there are problems.
Who's Simpiwe now?
Simpiwe is in the studio running the whole show for us.
Yes, I caught a glimpse of your promo yesterday,
yes.
And I saw this lady with Cliff Central in the back. Oh, so she works for Cliff
Central. That's Simpiwe. Oh, okay. So Annette says, I agree with Damon, women are generally better drivers, but we cannot reverse. Yeah, I mean, parallel parking and reversing is a whole skill on its own. You're pretty good at that stuff. Look, I mean, didn't you teach Mavale how to drive?
I taught my valet how to drive, but we never got to the parking part.
Yeah.
I just remember I took her for two or three driving lessons, but we never got to the parking part. And then she never came to my wedding, but I'm not bitter. I've moved on.
Damon, how are the dogs? People want to know. People have got to know.
We're thinking of getting a giant schnauzer now.
What's a giant schnauzer?
Giant.
What's that?
Oh, it's like a mini. It's a big dog. It's between 50 and 40 kilograms. They're like the size of a German Shepherd.
Wow.
And they're like schnauzers. They are gorgeous, gorgeous, stunning dogs. But Bernice has correctly said, you know what? Let's wait for Rufus to die. Because Rufus is the diabetic one,
yes.
And Rufus is very, very grumpy. He doesn't like other dogs. Rufus has sent three dogs to the vet. He loves dogs with long ears. He likes to bite them. He sent what are those dogs that they like to experiment on? Blood. He sent one of those to the vet, and
a bloodhound.
He sent a fox terrier to the vet as well, and one other dog.
So,
he likes to bite.
So he's not very well socialized.
Let's wait for Rufus to look, because he's blind. He's more grumpy, because a dog comes up to him and he gets a fright and he bites. But he does have partial vision in his one eye. And he's actually, you know what, considering his health, he's doing very well. In fact, there he is now. He's lying on the couch.
No, and we can't
see. Happy.
We can't see him. So
he's pretty happy.
How old is Rufus?
Rufus is 10. He'll be 10 in June, July. And he's in relatively good health. He's doing okay. He urinates all over the place. Except the last few days he hasn't. But because of the diabetes, he'll just urinate all over. But luckily, he always chooses opaque surfaces. He doesn't choose carpets most of the time, which is nice. Because weeing on the carpet is a problem.
Yeah, I remember you told us the story of how you had to go and have that one carpet cleaned.
We have our carpets cleaned every 4 or 5 months. We bring in the guys to clean the carpets.
You never thought of putting in one of those doors that the dogs can go in and out?
We do know we got that.
So
we got that, but Rufus is not well. Rufus is he can't control himself. He doesn't get there. But
yeah.
I'm sure 80% of the time he does urinate outside. But once a day or once every second day, we'll find urine in the kitchen or in the entrance hall. It's he's not well.
Yeah.
No, we got those doors. Those doors are fantastic. Thank God for those doors.
Thank God for those doors.
You don't have to worry about your dogs.
Look, luckily, my dog was pretty well trained, and he very seldom pees in the house. It's only if he doesn't have a way out.
Yeah.
So he gets then obviously he has to pee on the floor, but he's careful.
Excellent.
He does it on the tiles, which is thank God it's easier to clean, right?
What the pleasure of a small dog is that you don't have to worry about him going. You don't have to worry about them getting in and out. They do it themselves.
Yeah.
I realized as a child growing up, we had these big dogs, these Bouviers.
Yeah.
And you just spend your life. You spend your life literally letting the dog in and out all the time. Because here in South Africa, we can't just leave doors open, generally speaking, depending on how you live. But just you spend your life letting the dog in. And that's another thing that we've got to take into consideration. If we do want to get a giant schnauzer, do we then want to spend the next 10, 15 years opening and closing a door and getting up all the time? Because we've become lazy. We're so used to these miniature schnauzers that do their own thing.
Yeah,
but you know what?
But also, doesn't it?
White privilege problems.
Doesn't a big dog worry you because it's more responsibility in some ways? And if it's going to live inside, it's going to be taking up a lot more space. I mean, is
Oh, no, not a problem. Not a problem. We love our animals. We love our dogs. It's not a problem. No, it's beautiful. They can. We got plenty of couches. We got double. We got king size beds. Not a problem.
I'm always interested.
I look forward to it.
I'm always interested in why people choose a particular kind of dog. And I know there are lots of people who don't have any pets at all, and that's fine too. But if you are a dog person, a lot of people stick to a certain breed, like you say in this case.
Oh, yes.
You know, Schnauzer is your favorite breed. I mean, my sister will not ever have anything but a corgi. I've got this this Cavalier King Charles Spaniel who's just amazing. And some people will not, their whole life long, they'll stick to one breed of dog, and that's just the only thing that they have.
Yeah, well, you know, I grew up with Bouviers.
Mm.
If you don't know what a Bouvier is, it's like, imagine an English sheepdog, but with dark hair.
Oh, isn't it what Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis was before she got married? She was also a Bouvier.
She was also a Bouvier, but then she became a Kennedy. Nancy Reagan had a Bouvier.
Yes.
Nancy Reagan.
That's right.
Go to YouTube and go Nancy Reagan Bouvier. And there's a funny video of Nancy Reagan battling with her Bouvier because they're big dogs. And Nancy Reagan was, you know, she was quite a petite
woman. Yeah.
And the Bouvier nearly took her for a ride. Yeah,
all right,
that's what Bouviers can do.
We've got plenty of good stuff coming for you in the next hour. Stick around and we'll catch up on all the important information, including some of the news. And we'll have Simpiwe join us as well. And stick around for that and a whole lot more. Damon Kelvari's with us this morning. CliffCentral.com on a Wednesday. CliffCentral.com.